When the military needs to send covert messages over its wireless networks, it cloaks the transmissions in virtual noise or chatter. This method hides secret communications effectively, but it also consumes a lot of bandwidth, which limits message size and speed. Syed Ali Jafar is a research professor at the University of California, Irvine. He's been working on a way to make the military wireless networks larger, faster, and more able to accommodate more users in conjunction with the Office of Naval Research. He told me more about his work.
What I work on is an area called information theory that is concerned with the fundamental limits of communication networks. And what that means is how many bits per second or how fast you can send information over a communication network. And especially for defense purposes or tactical networks, we're interested in wireless communication networks that are robust to jamming, that have to be secure against eavesdropping. And they should be, of course, capable of sending information at high data rates. That is very essential. But the ability, of course, to design such networks is limited, or rather their fundamental limits are limited by certain constraints, such as how much power do you have at the node to transmit, but more importantly, how much interference you cause to each other. Especially wireless networks tend to be interference limited, as in that interference is the main bottleneck that they face.
And would that be interference from similar people or people using the same network for legitimate purposes, or interference from other sources outside the signal that's carrying the information?
Very good. So, yeah, interference can happen in many ways. It can arise, of course, from friendly sources that are trying to access the channel at the same time. It could also be from a malicious jammer, somebody whose goal is primarily to disrupt the communication. And then, of course, interference has other consequences as well. So it can carry information about the messages which is meant to be secure. Like you're not really trying to broadcast your information, but because the wireless signal is heard everywhere, so even the undesired receivers would hear some of your message, and that's detrimental from a security perspective. So in all these ways, interference ends up being the principal barrier to the performance limits of wireless networks.
So to make an analogy, it would almost be as if you have a problem with induction on a wired circuit, you have a problem with interference on wireless.
Right. I mean, in fact, in wired circuits also, that induction creates the interference problem. So, for example, the DSL, there's a lot of research in DSL that uses the same principles as the wireless networks.
How did you do your research and what have you discovered?
So we were just trying to see what is the best that one can do with these in terms of interference management. And for the longest time, I mean, the way that wireless networks are designed is that you try to avoid interference. That is to say that if multiple users are trying to send information at the same time, you usually assign them either different frequencies or ask them to transmit at different times. So in a way, you're keeping them separate from each other so they don't interfere with each other. And the problem with this approach, of course, is that as the number of users increases, then essentially it's like you have a cake and you're dividing that cake among the users. So each one of them will get a smaller and smaller portion as there are more users competing for that same spectrum. So think of spectrum or the bandwidth as this cake at the center. That's the main resource that we're interested in. So that's how current systems are designed. And it's believed that, I mean, it was believed for the longest time that this approach is really optimal, that you cannot do better than this. So, and in fact, what could be proved that if you have one user, of course, trivially, that user should be given everything. But if you have two users, then you can also prove that you cannot do any better than each of them getting half of the total spectrum. So that led people to think that it will go on this way. So now if I have three users, I cannot do better than each of them getting a third. And if I had 100, then I couldn't do any better than each of them getting 1% of the total spectrum. However, beyond two users, nothing was proved. So that was a big open question in network information theory. And that's the question we were after. And so what we found was that, surprisingly, beyond two users, so as you have three or you have 100, it doesn't matter. In fact, it's always optimal and it's always possible to give each user one half of the cake or one half of the bandwidth or spectrum, even though there are many more than two users competing for it. So that is a very counterintuitive thing to say, because what I'm saying is that there's one cake and there's 100 people and they want their own piece of the cake, as in they don't want to see interference from others, and still it's possible to give each of them a half of the cake. instead of 1% of the cake.
We're speaking with Dr. Syed Ali Jafar. He's a professor at the University of California in Irvine. And this is using like time division techniques?
Well, so time division is one of the techniques that will be the more conventional way of dividing the cake. So if you were dividing time between 100 users, then each of them will get only 1% of the time. So their share of the cake will diminish. Same thing with frequency division. So the frequency division, time division, or even code division, the CDMA, they're all techniques that follow that same conventional idea of taking the resource and just dividing it into smaller and smaller fractions, depending on how many users are asking for a piece of it.
And those are the techniques that are widely used by all of the conventional carriers too, correct?
Exactly. That's pretty much exclusively of the techniques that are used currently. So the new thing that we're talking about, which is interference alignment, is not yet used anywhere in practice. It's still very early for that. So that brings me to the idea of interference alignment. So the way that we are able to have half the cake available to each user is through this idea of interference alignment, which is a way of designing signals. So it is an intelligent way of designing signals such that every receiver, let's say, who is seeing interference from everyone else, when they see interference, they will see everyone's interference in the same part of the spectrum. So somehow you can design signals in such a way that each receiver, even though he's seeing, let's say there were 100 users, so each receiver is seeing 99 interferers, it would seem to him that all these 99 interferers are occupying the same part of the spectrum. So as if they're overlapping. So in a sense, it's as if there was only one interferer. And that leaves the other half of the spectrum free, interference free for him. So then somehow you can do this in such a way that this happens for every receiver. So every receiver, from its own perspective, sees a picture in which one half of the spectrum is available free for him, in which he sees no interference, but the other half of the spectrum, from his perspective, it seems that everybody is sharing just that half.
Sure. Now, have you been able to demonstrate this in a laboratory setting?
So there are people who have test labs. I personally do not have a test lab. I tend to work more on the theoretical side. But on the test labs, people have demonstrated it for 3 and 4 users. And they have test labs at MIT and Arizona and a bunch of other places that they've tried this for. 3 users is the first thing to try, because when you say everybody gets half the cake, up to 2 users, nothing interesting happens. But starting from 3, it's something that needs to be shown.
But it sounds like this research would have been of interest enough to the Defense Department that the Office of Naval Research would sponsor it.
Yes, of course. I mean, the research has been sponsored by ONR. It's also been sponsored by DARPA and NSF. In terms of impact, I would say there are, of course, many challenges. But if eventually this thing can be made practical, that would have a tremendous impact on society as a whole, and especially tactical networks, because this interference alignment scheme, which allows us to dramatically increase the amount of bandwidth that is available to each user by several orders of magnitude, also happens to be very robust to jamming. It also happens to be something that automatically has a built-in security against eavesdropping. And the way that happens is, just as I mentioned, that from each receiver's perspective, it seems that all the undesired or all the interfering information is localized in one half of the spectrum, which means that if there were 99 interferers, they're really jamming each other in the other half of your bandwidth.
Well, I guess we'd have to see that on a blackboard. But does it look as if this theory can be applied not only in the public carrier networks, but also, say, in the Wi-Fi spectrum or satellite frequencies?
Right. I mean, so mathematically, these networks, the fundamental characterization of these networks is very similar. So especially in information theory, what I'm studying is really a mathematical model. And in that model, things are really, it is such an essential way of characterizing these networks that there's really no distinction between one wireless network and another. So the principles I'm talking about are very basic mathematical principles that apply to every wireless network, and it also apply to wired networks as well, as some of the ones that you mentioned before.
Now, if the Defense Department is interested in this to the degree that it sponsored the research and has awarded some prizes, it seems like the carriers would be beating down the door of your office.
Right. So several carriers have, of course, asked me about it as well. But as I said, I generally tend to prefer to work on the basic side of research. So I'm more interested in removing the remaining fundamental obstacles that are still there, because any theory, when it starts, has a number of idealized assumptions built into it. And when you start making things practical, there are several steps that the theory itself has to go through before you can actually make things work in a hardware platform. So I'm more focused on those theoretical challenges. And I also find that having support from federal government like the NSF and the ONR and DARPA, this gives me a lot more freedom than working directly with industry, which tends to be often focused on more incremental things. They want something that works tomorrow, and so they cannot change their system from scratch, right? So that is much harder to do with something like this, because what we are talking about is pretty much a redesign of the whole system from scratch. It's a different kind of a much more long-term goal than what the industry might be interested in just the next year or next 5 years.